You may or may not, you probably could be or could not be on social media. You may have seen videos of Bonkrana last night. Two busloads of men, as they have been described, arriving in Bonkrana. There was a demonstration or a protest. I don't know how you might describe it. I wasn't there, and as I say, I've only saw the videos. Now, normally these stories are covered in a certain way in that, you know, people come on and they're angry about it. We haven't had many of those calls yet, and then maybe others would come on and say they weren't happy with the welcome, in inverted commas, that were that they received. But this is happening in reverse, because Des, you've seen these videos. You're not happy with it, are you?
No. Good morning, Craig, and thanks for taking the call.
Sorry, Des.
I'd just like to make the wider community, your listeners, aware that there are many, many people in Bonkrana who do not support the intimidation that we witnessed last night in Bonkrana. It is understandable that many people in the Shawan and in the wider area are worried about the cost of living crisis, trying to make ends meet, and they worry about, you know, the future of their children, the housing, healthcare, education facilities for the future. But it's not the fault of vulnerable migrants who are seeking safety in our communities that we're short of housing and we're short of good medical facilities and infrastructure and job creation schemes. It is not their fault. But the far right in Ireland, right, are trying to scapegoat vulnerable people, migrants, and other marginalised communities.
Well, Des, can I say, if you don't mind, and just to tease the conversation, I don't think it would necessarily be fair to call everyone who was out expressing concerns last night far right. They might not have any far right affiliation or far right views beyond this. But what did happen is, in an area that the services are already incredibly under pressure, you know the situation with getting a GP's appointment or the housing and other issues. It's not a coincidence, I would imagine, that these people were brought into the area under the cover of darkness. There's been very little, if any, local consultation. And people are obviously, you know, fearful, because we are fearful of the unknown. And if you're not told something's going to happen, it becomes the unknown. So to some extent, although, you know, might not like the nature of the welcome they got, can you not understand the emotion that's driven it? That of course, there's just no information there. People don't know what's going on.
Okay, Greg, I'm glad you brought that point up. Are there a couple of points there that you made that I would just like to respond to?
The first one is
you're absolutely correct in saying that people who are maybe protesting are not necessarily racist, but that does not mean that they are not being manipulated and directed by people with a far-right agenda. And if you let me explain this, it is not. There has been a cavalcade of cars going around the town the past couple of nights, a loudspeaker coming from the cars, telling local people that they should protect their children. They should be wary and fearful of young men coming into the town, that their children will be in danger. Now, that is explicitly racist, because singling out for prejudice, discrimination, or antagonism by an individual or a community against a person or people on the basis of their membership of a particular racial or ethnic group or marginalized group, that is a clear example of racism.
All right, Des, but is it possible, Des, though, that this is actually gender-based and not race-based, in that it doesn't matter whether they were two busloads of people of colour, men of colour, or whether they were two busloads of white men, let me put it like that there. These people, they have suspicions that they're not properly vetted. They don't know the backgrounds. They don't know if they've committed crimes in countries where they've come from. Again, they've not been given any information in that regard. So in the vacuum of information and knowledge is going to be filled when you've got two busloads of strangers, wherever they're from, coming into an area, it's going to be filled with fear and caution and nervousness. I mean, that is understandable, Des, is it not? I'm not taking sides here. I'm a big fan, Des, of having these conversations out in front,
sure,
rather than on social media or on message groups that you're banned from joining.
No.
Do you know what I mean? So I don't want you to think I've invited you on here to try and cut the legs from under you. That's not the motivation, and I hope people listening know that. But do you get where I'm coming from?
Sure. if it was two busloads of English people or two busloads of people from Dublin coming, there would not be the same reaction. And I think that we're talking here about two busloads of people possibly coming from war-torn or drought-stricken Africa and singling out people because of their ethnic background and trying to make an explicit link between their ethnicity and their potential threat to our children is explicitly racist.
But is it not the case, is it not the case that really, if the truth be told, even the state does not know the background of these men, precisely their route to Ireland, whether or not they had documentation with them when they arrived? Do you know what I mean? Like, you're saying it as if we know for a fact that all of these people have actually fled persecution or war, but the state has yet to actually really determine that. That's why they are put into these this accommodation, and that is when their protection application is reviewed. Des, again, I hope you understand the motivation for that question.
Craig, I work with young migrant men in Derry, and also work with privileged to work with some refugees in Bunkrana also. I'm working with young men, as some of the local far right in Bunkrana call, young men of military age. Now, these young men, I take them to the mosque on a Friday morning after we have education classes here with them in Derry. They are the most respectful people that I have ever met. They are a threat to nobody. They're only interested in integrating and forming and developing life-enhancing friendships and relationships. They want to contribute to our communities. They're a threat to nobody. But Greg, if you or I were traveling from, say, Somalia, as some of the young men that I work with, they've traveled from Eritrea to Somalia, across the sea into into Yemen, then northwards into Saudi Arabia. It took them 18 months traveling by night so that they would not be kidnapped by the jihadi militants and forced to work as child soldiers. They then spent a year and a half in refugee camps in Greece, across the Med, and now they're so relieved to be here, and they're only interested in developing friendships.
But Des, you're in a position where you deal directly with these people. You've got to know them. The people of Bunkrana, for an example, they don't have the information that you have. They don't know their personalities. They don't know their backgrounds. They don't know where they're from. They don't know where they're going to go. They don't know how they're going to be supported. They don't know about any liaison or integration with the local community. You're coming from this from a position of knowledge whereby you've been able to establish this. But put yourself in the position of a community whereby this is thrust upon them at night with none of the information that you have, Des. Surely, at the very least, there should be some forewarning, some explanation along the lines that you have, a town hall meeting. The reason the town hall meetings are avoided is because they know that the arrival of these people would be resisted. But at the very least, though, the people who are moderate in their views or understanding, sorry, not moderate, that's the wrong word, but maybe have a sympathy to it, you know, they could have their concerns addressed. But they don't have that because, you know, now what happens is, whether you or I agree or disagree, Des, and I'm not here to, I'm not expressing opinion here. If a local lady, for an example, used to walk two kids past this accommodation previously that was empty, she will think twice probably of walking past it if there's eight young men that she doesn't know standing at the front. Like, that's not racism. That's just, you know, I actually genuinely don't believe it's racism, Des. I think it's just no information and, you know, no communication.
Greg, I tried to distinguish already, and maybe I didn't make it clear enough. I think there's a clear difference, and we have to differentiate between the fears that you're talking about and the far right who are manipulating these fears. That is an important distinction to be made, okay? And the reason why people are arriving at midnight or the early hours of the morning is that the panic button has already been pressed by the manipulators of the far right in the Bunkrana area, who are trying to make people fear the people who are coming into the town with absolutely no evidence. I had a birthday party for my daughter last October, And we had a number of young migrant men at her birthday party. They are incredibly respectful. Mm-hmm. What I would say to the people of Bunkrana is, look, Bunkrana has quite rightly a reputation for being a wonderful place to live in. And I can verify that. The people of Bunkrana are welcoming to all communities and have had that reputation, as the people of Ireland have been when they went to other countries and raised the quality of life in places like mm-hmm. America or Australia mm-hmm. or England. Okay, so we have that reputation of being the people that have never colonized another country. We don't have a major problem with a racist mindset or a sense of ethnic superiority. Okay, so we take people as we find them. Mm. Already in Bunkrana, there already has been really good positive relationships developed between local people and between people of who have been migrants and come into the community. I would ask the people of Bunkrana, take your time, get to know the people who are coming in. You will find that they are absolutely beautiful, wonderful people.
So in terms of two busloads of lads, this military age unvetted stuff. I'm military age and unvetted. Just about, mm-hmm. Those are words that are thrown out. It doesn't matter if they're 70 or they're 23 to me. It doesn't matter. But you must, Des, get how it can be disconcerting to a local community not to have families coming in or women and children or a man, a woman, three kids or whatever it is. But when it is two busloads of fellas who the country doesn't fully know their background yet, so we can't suggest the locals could be told of their background, it is understandable that there is going to be genuine concern there. And I would say it would be there without agitators, because I've seen residents groups around the country chase agitators from it, saying, you're not from this area, get out of here, we have our own concerns. I don't want to do the genuine people of Bunkrana who are scared or nervous a discredit by saying that their actions are only there because of agitators.
Yeah. Okay. What I would say is this, Greg. If it was you or I who was coming into the town last night and we fled from war or drought or famine, the chances of us having a passport, if you're living in Somalia, are practically zero, because we're not going to be able to get off our holidays in Europe somewhere. We wouldn't have any ID, especially if you're literally running for your life.
And I get you, Des, but and I think we agree on that. So how could the state properly determine the potential for criminality if they can't actually even identify the person to cross-reference them? And that is going to create fear, because you've painted a picture of the people that you know, and I get that, and they sound like wonderful people, and it's great that's the way it is. But for the local community, because the state doesn't know their background or perhaps criminal history, which might be fine, don't get me wrong, you're asking for a huge leap of faith from the general population, Des, not to be a wee bit worried and scared and nervous.
Well, what I would be saying to the local people in Bunkrana, who I know very well, is that, look, give yourselves a bit of time, get to know some of the people coming in, help them to integrate, and I guarantee that certainly all the young people in Bunkrana and people of all ages from their 60s right down to their teens, people, migrants in Bunkrana that I've worked with, they will definitely enhance our lives if we give them an opportunity to build relationships. Okay. Greg, if somebody breaks the law, no matter what background they come from, whether it be Irish or a migrant background, they deserve to be processed through the criminal justice system.
Understood. I get you.
But one of the things I just want to finish up, one of the main perpetrators of disinformation and fear in the town has been quoting Breitbart, which is a far-right, neo-fascist, Nazi website.
I get you.
In Europe,
I know that.
And in North America.
I understand that, Des. Yeah? Listen, so and I don't...
We should not be naive in thinking that the far right are not in here somewhere.
I don't know who you're talking about, nor do I want to know. But all I will say is that a lot of the people out there probably were out there for completely different reasons. But I get you. Des, listen, I hope you feel heard. Thank you very much for that, Des there. Joe... listen, I think we can establish here that we can't label those that were concerned and out yesterday as far right. That would be doing them a disservice. It hasn't happened on this show. I'm not doing that, Joe, but I think that's one of the points that you want to make.
Well, I was there last night, and I was not there. I don't even know what far right is. Haven't a clue what it is. Don't want to know what it is. The one reason I was there last night, 65 unvetted males coming into a small town beside a school, a chapel, the main street. We haven't a clue about their background, their history, where they came from, nothing. Don't want to inflict that on Buncrana. Don't want to do it.
What is your concern?
Well, exactly what I said. 66 unvetted males coming into a small town, into the one area, mm-hmm. and being left to their own devices. Day and night, they're just being left there to stagger around the streets, whatever they have to do, make their own way around, find their own way of doing things. It's just, no, it's not on. I mean, our own town is struggling. Housing, look, the list goes on. Health, it's endless, like, you know. And I was not there with anything to do with for far right. I haven't a clue what it is, so I'm not even going to get into it. I got a phone call yesterday evening. The buses are coming. 66 unvetted males. The wife says to me, we're going down. And I didn't hesitate.
Mm. But you said unvetted.
I'll go back down tonight if I have to be.
If you said unvetted, everyone keeps saying unvetted. Are you vetted? I'm not vetted, Joe. Have you ever been vetted? Joe?
No, but I've been living in this town for over 50 years.
My point is, me and you were unvetted males, right? Both of us probably military-aged males too. I mean, if the truth be told, if you were handed... No, I'm not having a go at you, right? But if you were handed a document last night and it said, these men have been vetted and they're decent lads, that doesn't matter. People keep using this unvetted males. It's not really about whether they're vetted or not.
Well,
it's about the
fact that... Let me put it to you another way. If I decided to go to Australia tomorrow...
Yes.
Can I just pack my bags and jump on a flight and go?
I don't think you're vetted on arrival, but I don't know what the situation is. I don't. Do you have to get Garda vetted to go to Australia?
You have a criminal record of any kind, you do not get on.
Right. So you say these people should be...
Simple.
...vetted for a criminal record before they're accepted into communities?
At the point of entry, wherever that is, and it's not Dublin, it's not, it's not anywhere in this country, so it's not.
Okay.
It should be, you know, you see it all the time, like these camps set up, and the people should be taken through and vetted properly.
Mm-hmm. All right.
We don't know what we're inflicting on the town of Buncrana, we just don't know, and I'm not willing to take that chance. Simple as that.
All right, Joe, as you say, you'll be back out again tonight, you feel so passionately about it. Jack Murray, Councillor Jack Murray, you've been listening to the contributions from both Des and also Joe there. Do you understand Joe and others' concerns as to how this happened and what have you? What's your view on it? Should it have happened is the first question.
Yeah, well, there's a huge amount of concern across Buncrana yesterday and today. Like, my phone hasn't stopped. I've been speaking to people who are at the protest at Fulme. I was down and walked my daughter to Scully's, going across the road from the centre this morning. I spoke to people there, real genuine, self-aware people who have genuine concerns about what has happened. And I have serious concerns, serious reservations about the building in question. I think 66 people living, it's like 19 rooms, it's going to be 3 or 4 people who don't know each other are going to be bunked together in a very crowded space. So I think that's wrong. I think that's morally wrong. I've been talking on the show in the past as the other centre in the shorefront had opened.
All right, that line's gone. Can you just go back there, Jack? Sorry, the line cut out. You spoke on the show before about the shorefront. Take it up from there, please.
Yeah, I'd spoken about the concerns that the people of the town had at that point about the lack of consultation, the lack of GP spaces, which are full capacity, people won't get them, but lack of school spaces. And the tension had risen at that time. So the Department of Justice were well aware of that. But yet again, they decided to do this with no communication to the people of Buncrana, and again bringing people in the dead of night, which does not look good. And of course, that's raised concerns. Now, I do agree with the point that made. There are some people that have been there that would have been putting out misinformation and commentary that I would find abhorrent and racist. But that's a small number of people. Most of the people there were genuine people good Buncrana people, salt of the earth people, who have genuine concerns about how this whole thing has been handled. And I do think the Department of Justice have a lot to answer for. And this has happened across Ireland. It looks like anywhere that they can get a roof, they will cram as many people as they can without any concern for the local
what
people.
What should happen now, Councillor? Because those, as you mentioned, there's a school there. These are young lads. People don't know their background, don't know, you know, they could be the best in the world, but they could have extensive criminal history. People simply don't know. And I certainly don't want to add to any fear, but I want to make sure that everybody's heard. What should happen next then? What is going to allay those people? What is going to allay people's concerns? Because we heard from Des there, you know, a lot of these people don't have passports. So you can't vet someone without a passport because you don't really know where they originated from. So what can or should be done now?
Yeah, see, and that's the thing, and the absence of all this is communication. Now, myself and Paddy McLaughlin are making contact with the Department of Justice to try and find out about this. Like, at this moment in time, nobody knows what has happened. I don't know where those men went last night. I'm a county councillor and I've been given no information. We got an email, I think it was last Wednesday or Thursday, just to say that 66 men were coming and to be imminent. And that was the entirety of the information we were given. Since then, there's been nothing else. We didn't know when or anything about this. Like, the government, the Department of Justice, have a huge amount to answer for here because they've almost created the circumstances where this tension and kind of volatility is unavoidable because it's been handled so badly from the top
down. But what would you say? Like, what would you say to the fact that these are people, we don't know what they're fleeing, war, famine, whatever it might be, that we have an international responsibility which we took upon, we signed up to it, we could sign out of it if we wanted to, but we signed up to it. The tents are full, the houses are full, they have to go somewhere. And if you do consultation, no one, there's going to be NIMBYism. You're not going to be able to move them anywhere. That seems to be the strategy. So what would you do? What would your party do as a policy then? Because these people are being brought in, they have to be put somewhere. Where would you put them? Because you know yourself, there's no accommodation.
Yeah, look, I feel extremely sorry for these men that are caught up in the middle of it, because a lot of the anger is directed at them, and this is because circumstances not of their creation at all. This is bad government policy. Look, I think, and I can only speak for the town of Buncrana and the people I represent, I think, look, if you had a suitable building, it wasn't it's not 19 bedrooms with 66 people crammed onto the main street. And if there had been communication, maybe there would be more understanding. There's certainly less concerns if people felt they had some say or some input into how this situation unfolded. But when you just imminently just send out an email, they're coming, we're going to bring them in the middle of the night, I won't tell you anything about who they are, where they're from, anything like that. It allows the misinformation to snowball.
And well, what should happen next,
because
Jack?
We're speaking in a vacuum.
Yeah, what should happen next?
At this moment in time, I'm going to be writing to IPAS and Department of Justice and with a series of questions. Like, is there GP spaces for these people? Because
there's no GP spaces because people have to wait over a week for a GP position. We know there's no GP spaces.
Yeah. And I'm aware of towns in Donegal where there's asylum seekers now that can't access the health service, can't access GP. So that's really, really badly handled. Like, there should be some more planning, some more foresight before these decisions are made, because it really seems at a national level, if you can find any building with a roof on it, get them in, just cram them in, and the people will find out when it's happened. And it's just that's where I'm angry. Is this creation is almost designed to create tension, concerns, worry among the local people. And that's why there's some things that have been said that I strongly disagree with, that I find abhorrent. There's people there that were there last night that are genuine salt of the earth people that have real genuine concerns, and those people deserve to have their concerns addressed. And the absence of that is what's created this problem.
All right, thanks for that. Kim McMenamin's a member of Buncrana Community Watch. Kim, was it your organisation that called the I don't know what you'd call it, demonstration protest last night?
Yeah, we've been building it up since March, and we got good support, and then we were told it was going to just be families, and we were happy with that because, you know, we welcome all nationalities, all families, and people who are properly vetted. But because of this situation, you know, these are unvetted males, and we don't know. No one can say they are vetted. No one can say they're not vetted. We approached the Gardaí, and they weren't given any names of anyone coming in, whether they were vetted or not vetted. So no one's getting information, like Jack said there. No one is getting the information. So this cloak and dagger policy by the government of taking them in the middle of the night tells you right away that that's just morally wrong. But where, like, where's the welcoming committee for these people if it's all kosher and above board? Where is the welcoming committee? There's none. And, you know, if these are genuine and vetted refugees coming from war-torn countries, why, where is all the women and the children? Like, I thought the young men of military age were supposed to be fighting the war back home, protecting the women and children, and maybe sending them over here.
Yeah, that's Ukrainian.
You know, it's a good point to make. Like,
Kim, do you, like, it's clear there is a... There is an upset in political circles and the general population, that have concerns because the whole community was there last night. Do you think that maybe there's a bit of a Project Fear operation going on there as well, warning of, you know, lock up your children, lock up your women, sort of a thing? Do you think we should maybe park that? Because there genuinely is, you know, that, and we can get through this in dialogue, there's generally seemingly a cross-community concern. There may be sort of the fearful stuff. There's a bit of a playbook element to that. And I'm not saying it's you that's at it, but you know yourself across the country that we don't really need that, that we need to sort of discuss this together and come up with solutions together.
Well, I should not be having to be out here doing this and standing up for the community. Donegal County councillors were informed of this last week. Their silence is actually very sickening because everyone, and this, I'm going to just say this directly to Jack Murray, everyone is upset and sick that they just did not inform the community. Jack Murray was asked to come to a meeting the other night by a very well-known family in Buncrana, and he would not come. Like, I would go and meet him. I would go and meet Donegal County Council, and I would show them that I come from the heart, and our main concern here is the children of Buncrana. Our main concern is their safety. Because these are unvetted males. So
yeah, but no one has. Like, everyone's come in here. Yeah, everyone's concerned about children, though. I do sometimes think that people think they've the
children they, are in they danger.
Have, like. I know, but sometimes we're all concerned about children with all different things. Whether it's people coming into the country, people that live in the country, whether they're going to school across the road, no one has sort of exclusivity on concern for children. I take your point. Stay with me, David. I'm not comfortable with the tone of this morning's conversation.
Hi, Greg. No, I'm not comfortable with the tone of the conversation because, you know, we're talking about unvetted men and unvetted this, and we're talking about men in general and people who are seeking asylum. You know, we're talking about people's human rights here. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about unvetted men or we don't know these people, when a neighbour moves in beside you, do you get a vetting of them? Do you get a choice in the matter whether they move in next door to you or not? You know, we're talking about consultations. Now, we have to acknowledge there's a lack of information from our government, but we're punching down instead of punching up. The frustration should be with the government, not with migrant people who are coming in or asylum seekers who are coming in and having protests and stoking fear and hostility into them. You know, people who've already went through a lot of traumatic situations in themselves, you know, and we're talking about, you know, this unvetted and this danger. It's if we really kind of roll it back here, why are we only associating danger with black asylum men? You know, what stereotypes or what images
David, with respect, okay, and I think people who listen to this show generally would I hope they recognise that we try and have all the conversations, but in a very respectful way, and I don't think anyone's used disrespectful or bad language today in regards. If this was 66 white men and people had no knowledge of their background or from where they come, and they were putting three to a bedroom opposite a school, David, I would be confident that we'd have the same level of concerns. I don't believe this to me. Maybe there is for some there's a racial element to it because people are different, and maybe that's the views that they harbour. But I don't think it's fair to suggest that all of this concern is coming from the fact that these are people of colour, David.
But it's definitely an element, Greg, because if we look across the country, there's many of the times, I lived in many of the places where there's been hotels or apartments that have been full of men. who've been working in places or who go to places that are doing a bit of work and so on, electrical work or building work and so on. There's never that concern has been raised. I've never heard that concern before. The only it becomes a concern when it's the other, when they're not white, when they're not Irish. You know, that's when it becomes a concern.
But David, in fairness, because these are genuinely, a lot of people have genuine concerns that aren't rooted in any bigotry.
Totally.
The men you talk of, let's say, for instance, if they moved into an apartment in Dublin, they would be known to the Gardaí that have a PPS number. There would people, like, if the truth be told, even the local Gardaí and the local councillors, they don't know who these people are or their background. I find it impossible for people not to understand that how that is going to generate some concern, David. It's because it's a human nature thing. If it was next to your house or next to mine, I can't sit here and say that I wouldn't go, geez, what's going on here? Do you know what I mean?
There is a process, Greg. You know, people register with IPASS. They do get a PPS number. They do go through an interview. They do provide details. You know, it's not like people are just let in and then they're placed in different parts of the country. There's a process there. There's a thorough process there. You know, in the past, I've worked with that process and it's very thorough. You know, it's not like, you know, we talk about unvetted. People do go through an interview process with the IPASS Centre. And there is a process there, and a due process that is done with people seeking their human rights and seeking refuge within the country. But what I'm pointing out is that, you know, people are there's genuine concerns out there in terms of housing, in terms of health, in terms of education, and so on. Them concerns have always been there. Them concerns have been committed to our government actions over the years. I don't understand why communities are responding to stoke hostility and people arriving. It's not their fault. They don't have a choice in the matter. They're coming here to seek safety.
Okay, David, stay there. Kim, these people are coming to seek safety and refuge, and it's not fair that locals are stoking the situation or instilling fear into these people who themselves are victims.
Yeah, there's no hostility at all. Like, I mean, if it was families, it would be fine. But because it's like a large group of men, if there was 100 men from Dublin was moved in here besides 4 schools and a library, and the kids walk up and down Walker's Lane, we'd be totally unsafe and we'd be concerned. Even if the Garda knew their background, we would still be concerned. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of, misinformation. Yeah. No information coming from the Donegal County Councillors. They are hiding people, asking them to come out. They have been emailed, they've been inundated with emails, and they will not stand up for the people. So where is the representation from Donegal County Council? Jack Murray's a local man.
Yeah, but he's afraid to
come
and
speak to us. He's afraid to come. He won't come and speak to us. I could say that directly to him.
I wouldn't allow people to characterise you in a certain way. You know that. So
that's not a characterization. That's just saying he won't talk.
Understood, Kim.
It's political. Politics come before people, and that is wrong.
All right, okay.
And warehousing people for profit up here as well is wrong. You can't warehouse people for profit. So, like, we are not going to be like.
But what about
this is for humanitarian reasons.
So, Kim, why not protest outside the Dáil? Why not protest outside a minister's office? Why not protest outside the council offices? Why protest outside where these people are residing?
Because there's an immediate danger. If we don't stop them getting into that building, there's immediate danger for the children, yeah. So we're putting out a fire here, right?
Okay. Okay,
immediate danger, because you're on Vedic. Yeah.
All right, Kim, listen, thanks for your time. David, also, listen, I get where you're coming from when you talk about rhetoric and it being dangerous and what have you, but David, we have to have these conversations out public, because what's happening up until now, you've got a group of very liberal people, I don't know how you'd even describe them, who everything's rosy in the garden, we need to do this, we do that. And then we've got a separate group of people that are very concerned about services, concerned about massive changes in populations of a short period of time. David, it's not getting us anywhere having two separate groups of people not engaging with each other. We have to be able to have these open conversations, respectful and fair, where we try and get some sort of meeting of minds, because the way it's been done before now, and this is the way we try and do it on this program, it's not working. So that's the motivation for having these chats.
But how can we have a debate about people's human rights? So it's okay to have a debate about people's human rights and their rights. It's a right.
But David, let me put it to you like this. But David, the people of Buncrana, and I'm having a balanced conversation here, the people on Buncrana believe they should have the right to GP services. The people of Buncrana believe they should have the right to housing. The people of Buncrana believe that they should have the right to believe that their children are as safe as possible going to school. There are competing rights here, David, and we don't want people feel their rights are being trampled on to protect other people's rights. Again, that causes upset and division. So we have to recognise competing rights here, David.
I totally 100% agree with the ongoing crisis, Greg. I'm not delegitimizing that. But what I'm saying is it's up for public debate. It's the same when it comes to travellers. It's okay to have consultations, to have public debate about the rights of travellers, trans people, all marginalized groups. It's okay to have open conversations about people's rights. Do you not see the unequal power dynamic in that? You know, that we're up talking about, like, they're protesting in front of people's accommodation. They're blocking buses. Can you imagine the fear? If we go back to the human element of that.
Right.
So it's okay. What I'm saying is, you know, I agree with you. There needs to be dialogue. There needs to be meaningful dialogue in terms of people's rights and what's going on at the moment. But not this where...
Okay, there goes.
Where there's kind of violence, where you're standing up and blocking...
I think people's argument... will be far more respected and progressed if there is this chanting and shouting and loudspeakers and stuff that gets no one anywhere. I think people can have people can have their concerns heard. It adds nothing. Placards, send them home, and shouting, and that achieves nothing in strengthening an argument. But anyway, listen, David, thank you very much indeed. I do have to move on. I want to go to Tony Canavan, who's CEO of the Sialta University Health Group. Thanks for making yourself available to us, Tony. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
I suppose first and foremost, 78 GPs have written a letter calling for an external review of ED services and other measures as well, because they're concerned for their patients if they send them to the ED. 11 consultants have also written a letter backing their GP colleagues. Some commentary of what Letterkenny University is like, you know, barbaric scenes have been described by senior consultants. I don't have time to go through it all, but as CEO of the Sialta University Healthcare Group, a terrible indictment of Letterkenny University Hospital when you have all these leading medical professionals calling for action.
Well, I suppose, first of all, I think it is very clear that the general practitioners and indeed our own consultants, they're expressing concern for patients, and that's a concern that we absolutely share with them. I think it's really important when we talk about things like, you know, the emergency departments, and that they're very clear about what we're saying. And our assessment of the emergency department at Letterkenny is that it absolutely has seen an increase in the level of attendance. It has over the last 3 years. It has also seen an increase in the numbers of patients, unfortunately, awaiting admission on a daily basis on trolleys, and that is the situation that we're trying to address through a variety of measures across the hospital, and indeed across the community as well.
The consultants say that these plans have been on the table for quite some time. They haven't been delivered on. They need something to happen within the next 4 to 8 weeks, not before 2030.
So I think that's partly true, but of course it's not entirely true. So I think a fuller picture would describe a lot of change that has taken place in our health services across Donegal, including within Letterkenny University Hospital, but also in the broader community services over the last 3 to 4 years. So we talked previously about the development of enhanced community care programs, development of integrated care program for older people in the community, and work that we're doing with the National Ambulance Service around Pathfinder, which helps to redirect patients away from the...
And I get that, Tony, that's external, but let's just talk about the ICU. You know, there's supposed to be 15 beds there, according to a report published 6-7 years ago. There's still only 5. There's an extra bed, but it's so far away from the emergency department that it's seen as dangerous to use. So we can talk about step down, home care packages, discharges, the ambulance service. This is about inside the hospital, when we've got consultant anaesthetists saying that when people are discharged into another part of the hospital, they're actually concerned that their health might deteriorate. Such is the poor level of conditions.
Yes, and I agree with you. There are issues within the hospital that we also need to deal with, and ICU is one of those for sure. We absolutely do need to deal with it. So we currently have 5 beds, as you pointed out, and I agree that we do need to increase that to 10 beds. And I also agree that
when
it takes
will that happen, Tony?
We cannot put a time frame on it just yet, but we will be hopeful that we will get the approval for the money that is required to do the works associated with those beds in the very near future. Mm. But I cannot put a time frame on it, and unfortunately that's the reality of what we're living with.
Well, Tony, you know yourself, it's the 6th busiest hospital in the country. It has the 14th, I believe, the 14th level of funding per patient. What's the argument for Letterkenny University Hospital having not far off half the level of funding per patient compared to a comparable hospital such as Sligo University Hospital?
To be honest with you, I don't make those comparisons. I don't think it tells me a whole lot about the kind of care that's delivered in either of those hospitals. Mm-hmm. For the last 10 years, what we've been developing is a hospital group across the whole region, which includes Sligo, it includes Letterkenny, but also includes hospitals in the west. And it's how those hospitals function together that's important. So it's not the individual budget, which is very similar, by the way. As it happens for both Letterkenny and Sligo, very, very similar budgets. But that's not the issue. The issue is the overall resource that's available to meet the needs of people living in that part of the country.
All right. But, you know, obviously people aren't happy because I'll ask you directly, why have so many consultants resigned? Why have we lost both endocrinologists recently? What is going on?
I think it's, people have resigned and taken decisions for their own personal reasons, and I don't think it necessarily reflects what's happening within the hospital. I think what does reflect some of the difficulties that we have in Letterkenny is in some of our departments we're having difficulty recruiting to consultant positions. Now, we are working hard on that, and we are making some headway on that front as well. Mm. But Letterkenny is different to other hospitals around the country. It's providing a service to a population that's in, you know, that's remote from other hospitals, so it's the only hospital that people can attend. From County Donegal, and they don't really have much choice beyond that. So that presents certain difficulties to us when it comes to recruitment, but we're working hard on that.
And it's the only hospital you can attend. Say you need to see a cardiologist and one doesn't happen to be on call. How is that acceptable, that we don't have those services available to us here? It shouldn't be death by geography. I don't want to be dramatic, Tony, but we should have the same services all the hospitals have.
Well, yes and no is what I would say. What we should have and what we have been developing over the last number of years is we should have those services available within the region. It's not going to be possible to have every service available on every hospital site, nor would it be even appropriate. So what we do is we try to ensure that we have Model 3 hospitals that meet the emergency medicinal needs of most of the population that they're serving, and that when they have complex cases that they are referred on to.
Okay, let's give an example of reference. We have no urology service. It's in disarray, effectively. There's no emergency service. So you talk about this has to be provided on a regional situation. So it's in Galway. At the moment, if my information is correct, we've got an average 8-day wait for a transfer to Galway. So this model of not being able to provide services in every hospital, right, okay, let's accept that. Then why is there an 8-day wait to be transferred to Galway for urology services? That clearly then is a strategy that's not working.
So you're right again, Greg, and I would agree with you that it's not working in respect of all services, and there are difficulties across all of our health services. So Galway isn't a perfect hospital either. It also has difficulties, and that's reflected sometimes in the transfer times. But we are seeing progress in respect of some services. You mentioned cardiology earlier on. The outcomes that we're seeing now for patients from the northwest and indeed from across the whole region in terms of heart failure have improved very significantly over the last 10 years, and part of the reason for that is this region. Approach that we're getting patients to the right location to receive the right care at the time they need it.
Okay. Why has either Sialto or the Department of Health never actually sanctioned the second breast surgeon?
I think the issue is that we haven't managed to fill the second breast surgeon post, as opposed to it not being sanctioned. I think the sanction has been provided some time ago for that post. Mm. Our agreement has been put in place but again, the breast surgery and the cancer services are ones that operate again across on a regional basis, and that is the way that they should operate.
A lot of elective surgeries have been cancelled again, if my information is correct, from people that have contacted me. Surgeons are actually keen to do extra lists. They're not being facilitated. Why? So we've got staff in the hospital prepared to work on those cancellations of elective surgeries, but they're not being supported in doing so. Why is that?
So it's largely down to beds and bed availability. Mm-hmm. And again, we would prefer if it was otherwise. It's much better for patients if they can receive care early on, you know, before their issue develops into a very serious problem. So surgical intervention early mm-hmm. is important, and that is what we would like to do. But because of our limitations in terms of beds, we must focus on providing emergency care at times.
Okay. I'm sorry, I've been storing these questions up for a while, so sorry to hit you with them one after the other. But as you know, as I say, people text in and try and get the answers when I can. There's been a long campaign now, not far off 10 years, for the provision of an acute surgical unit. There are 7 elsewhere in Ireland, none up here. Local surgeons crying out for it. Why is that?
So again, I think we will make progress on that in the near future. We're putting together a development control plan for the site, and we will include in that the need for additional surgical services on the site as part of that plan.
Mm. Are you familiar with the dissatisfaction about the cross-border radiotherapy service?
I'm not familiar with. I'm certainly familiar with individual cases that where people have been dissatisfied. But in general, it is a service that works well. In fact, the direct feedback that I've received is that for many of the patients, that the alternative would be to travel as far south as Galway for radiotherapy. That they value that service very highly.
I mean, things mustn't be good because you know we're losing nurses. Right across the hospital in the surgical emergency departments, they're disillusioned. You say we can't really say why consultants are leaving. Do we ask them on departure? I doubt. Like, a lot of the answers, you've all of the questions I've put to you, Tony, with respect, you've accepted they are issues and there are problems, but there's been no answer to them. And a lot of people listening will feel that, you know, Letterkenny University Hospital doesn't matter.
So I disagree with you in that I think there are answers, and we have been providing answers. And while I've outlined the services for the service enhancements that we have put in place and that we're doing on a joint basis with the community, and that are really important for a community like Donegal, there is additional need over and above that. But we are making progress, and we have provided additional service. And I'd also disagree with you in relation to you've referred to the nursing staff leaving. Actually, the retention rate for nursing across the region, across all of our hospitals, is better in Letterkenny than it is in any of our other hospitals. In other words, what we find is that when people go to work in Letterkenny University Hospital, they tend to stay because they find that it is a good place to work. It's one where they've got good colleagues and where they can develop their own professional career.
All right.
As well.
Finally, consultants warn of the potential now for a service collapse. We have almost 100 medical professionals expressing these concerns. They want an immediate external review of how the ED is run and other measures put in place, not medium, not long term, over the next 4 to 8 weeks. Can you commit to that, Tony?
So the GPs wrote to me the week before last. I was copying in a letter that they wrote to the minister. I responded to them last week. One of the key things that they were saying in their letter, which I think is actually, it's different. It's certainly unprecedented in my time, is that they were looking to engage directly in the process of planning how the health services across the region, including within the hospital, are developed. And that's a really good development, a very positive development. And I have already written back to the GPs saying that I'm absolutely up for that engagement. And that is the way that we should be working with GPs, with community-based health services, and indeed the hospital services, and coming up with solutions together.
Tony Canavan, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Greg.
Take care. Tony Canavan, CEO of the Sialta University Hospital Group. We've ran a minute over. My apologies to John Breslin, who follows around the Northwest. But for me, Greg Hughes, and the rest of the team, which is Caroline Orr, we'll be back with you tomorrow.